When you think work, you think boots. You think boots, you think Ariat. You think grit, concrete, rain, and heat. And boots that never back down from any of it. You think comfort and durability that hold up on the job, off the clock, and every step in between. Because the day doesn't end when the job does. And from overtime to off duty, you're thinking Ariat boots. Boots that show up, stand out, and always back you up. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find yours at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
Hello and welcome to episode number 174 of the Kings of Anglia Ipswich Town podcast. My name is Andy Warren, standing in as host for Mark Heath this week, and I'm joined by a man who may well make the most exquisite chocolate brownies in the East. Stuart Watson, how are you?
Good, thanks. I'm glad you enjoyed those.
Oh, absolutely. At half-time in this wonderful game against Shrewsbury that we're going to be talking about in a minute, Stuart Watson produced a little tin foil parcel of some chocolate brownies that he had made and that had brought along to the game. I believe they've become a Watson family staple over the coronavirus lockdown period. But I was invited into the family, and absolutely brilliant, Stu. It was the best moment of the weekend by far. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
And of course, we are also joined by a man who I can see is now a little bit jealous that he didn't get a chocolate brownie. It's the lover of sugar, Ross Halls. You all right?
I was, until that just been announced. I'm a bit sad now. I just had squashies, sweets to eat at half time. But yeah, I'm all good. Good to be back. Good to see your faces and talk to you about Ipswich Town. So yeah.
What are squashies?
Sweets, drumsticks.
Oh, and you've got some on the go now as well.
Yeah, I'm going to have one right now. There we go. Set up there. These.
Okay, so they're basically drumstick lollies, but not on a stick. Much more practical.
Basically. Yeah.
And that was your half-time treat after what was a pretty miserable first 45 minutes of football at Portman Road at the weekend. That's what we're here to talk about. Of course, it didn't get too much better after half-time, but remarkably, during those 45 minutes, Ipswich Town found a way. And we're here discussing a game in which Town won the game in the 97th minute, which in normal times would probably have had a very excitable Mark Heath beginning this podcast about a dramatic game of football at the weekend that resulted in 3 points. But this one feels a little bit different, Stu. This isn't your normal 97th minute pandemonium winner, is it? There's undertones here.
Yeah, I think the lack of a crowd did probably have a big bearing on how I felt about it, and probably how everyone felt about it watching from home without that sort of explosion of emotion right at the end of the game. I think it would have felt more like a win. And I used that phrase on Twitter over the weekend, a win that didn't really feel like a win. And I had a few people kind of say, what a ridiculous thing to say, any win feels like a win. But what I meant by that is that the nature of the performance was very underwhelming. It never felt like it was a push, push, push for a winner type situation. Then you didn't have the fans in the crowd. It felt a bit odd. In the oddest of seasons, I can't really describe it much more than that. Of course, it could be a massive 3 points, and we might look back on it as saying that, you know, it's a sign of a good side that can find a way to win when they're not at their best, but it wasn't great, was it? Let's be honest.
No, it wasn't. And Ross, if we just talk through the game quickly, it took 4 minutes for Ipswich to go behind in this. Penalties have been a theme of late. I believe Jeff Stelling announced on Sky Sports that it was Toto that had given it away, with his reputation maybe sadly preceding him a little bit there. But it was Mark McGuinness. And from that point on, it all seemed like it was going to add up to being a really difficult day for Ipswich, didn't it?
Yeah. I think any team to go behind at home early on is always going to be a struggle. And There's just nothing in the first half. It's probably the worst first half I've seen this season for Town. I just was just shaking my head the whole half, just like, what is going on? Like, why aren't we, providing anything? You know, not many chances created. And I turned to the other photographer next to me and I just went, well, that was not good, was it? So, yeah, try not to swear there. Well done, me. But, yeah, just added to the misery of the game.
After the game, I think Paul Lambert and Jack Lancaster, who I spoke to, talked about Shrewsbury putting men behind the ball after that opening goal. Did you feel like that, Stu? I'm not sure I necessarily felt like this was a traditional get 1-0 up, park the bus kind of job from them. I didn't think they were hugely positive, but I didn't think they were intentionally trying to sort of settle in and necessarily try and frustrate Ipswich from that point on.
No, I think the Paul's post-match comments kind of rather overstated. I think, like you say, that sort of, it was made out to be, well, they had a 5-4-1, got their early penalty, parked the bus. It's hard to break those sort of teams down. They were organised. As is their right. They're a team that are battling relegation this season. They got an early goal away from home, and they were organised. But the whole sort of parking the bus narrative makes it sound like Ipswich were, when Paul talked about sort of we kept knocking and knocking and we got our rewards. That's the disappointing thing, is it didn't feel like that. It wasn't like wave after wave of attack, and you know, they were throwing in desperate blocks and the goalkeeper's making loads of saves and finally the breakthrough comes at the end that's deserved. It didn't feel like that, and things weren't happening on the ball for Ipswich, and there wasn't a great deal of creative spark and invention, and that's fine, you have days like that. But the thing that worried me most about this was the lack of, I don't quite know what the right description is, passion, aggression, fight. People will go, you can't say there was no fight because they stuck to the task and they found a way to win. But it just didn't feel like you had to kind of be in the stadium. There wasn't really an energy about the team, was there? There wasn't, you know, wasn't someone who went and made a tackle that lifted everyone else. It wasn't just, everyone was quiet as well. Even Luke Chambers was, I thought, quiet by his usual standards. It just didn't feel like there was any spark or life about Ipswich. Even when they were handed a lifeline, when that own goal went in, you still had a good 10, 15 minutes to go. And there was a break in play and the body language just looked a little flat. There wasn't anyone G-ing each other up. There wasn't, I don't know. It just never felt like that goal was coming. And then when that goal did come at the end, I think we all kind of laughed a little bit because it was like, how on earth have Ipswich managed to win that game? That's how it felt.
Yeah, it's hard to describe, isn't it? But it did, all these games feel flat in empty stadiums. They're not the same. There's something missing and the heart of it is missing. But this one did just, even from the warm-up onwards, felt particularly flat to me. And I guess Ipswich have got a little bit of a history of this, of coming out flat after long breaks from action. We've seen that before, haven't we? A bit of this long break was kind of due to the game that wasn't played last weekend, and then some of it was also due to the amount of players that had been rested from other games. Did you guys think that could maybe have been an issue towards it? I think that was another reason why I felt so disappointed by it, that they had such a pre-planned and long kind of run-up to this game, that they'd been looking to this match for the best part of 3 weeks.
What do you reckon, Russ?
Yeah, I think any pause in your fixture, I think, is always going to be, definitely these current times as well. I'm sure the training is still very different to what it is in normal times, because there's still a lot of, you know, testing has to be placed and all that jazz. So, and of course, we've got a lot of injuries, so I'm sure that, you know, there's not as many people training at once at the moment. And, you know, I think for anybody, I know fans can't go to games at the moment, but you still miss that Saturday feeling of a match day. You know, last Saturday, you know, you boys must have felt that, like, oh, normally I'm, you know, travelling up to a game or whatever, but it just felt nothing, you know, something was missing. And then, Yeah, I agree with you. Actually, going into the you know the game, you know during the warm ups, like great playlist. The club have got a good playlist going on, some good bangers going on. Even at half time, you know Dr. Dre played. You know when the half time whistle went, I went yes.
For about 12 seconds.
Yeah, 12
and then,
seconds.
And then someone cut it off.
Yeah, and I was like, what? But yeah, it just felt very flat. Like the most vocal person on that pitch was the Lino. My Lino, my side, because he was, I was just focusing on him for like a good 5 minutes because he was just so vocal. Like every time he was going up at that field, talking to the ref and saying to the throw-in, saying, oh, here, lad, here. And he was going, Pierre, because Sorry's player was called Pierre or whatever. It was just like, them sort of things you hear. But
was it, I mean, your pitch side, Ross, It felt quieter than usual to us up high in the stands. Was that the same pitch side?
Yeah, as you said, Chambers wasn't as vocal as he normally would be. No one really stood out. Like, even Jack's not the most vocal person, but you'd still think he would be frustrated that he's not getting the balls to him and stuff. But, you know, even Shrewsbury, though, they weren't really vocal at all, really. Like, Lambert wasn't vocal. I didn't hear Lambert that much at all. Even Stuart Taylor. So I was thinking, is this like a training game, or you know, what is this game really? And I was very deflated, as you know. I'm still a big town fan, so late winner, of course, you love late winners. You know, I'm sure the players would have been jumping into the crowd because they're scoring late. Well, definitely because it's a local lad scoring, but I just felt, as you guys like laughed, I just went, how have we just won this game? Like, I thought we were going about to lose this game, and now we've won it, and I just like, going. As Jeff Denning would say, unbelievable, Jeff. Or no, Chris Cammy would say, unbelievable. I just couldn't believe my eyes. We've just basically robbed all 3 points.
There's such a contrast, isn't there, between, I think the obvious one to think back to is the win over AFC Wimbledon last August, when Ipswich were one down at the break, and then late goals from Norwood, and then Jackson won that game. The contrast to this one was massive, wasn't it? Because in that Wimbledon game, Ipswich really were knocking on the door. They were pushing. There was intensity, some pace. And then Jackson's winner was a roar I haven't heard since or prior for quite some time at Portman Road. I've watched that goal back loads of times. It gets posted on Twitter all the time. The roar from that is kind of an example of what's missing from football at the moment, and it's also what was missing from this game in so many ways. But why do we think that was? What was going wrong for Ipswich out on that pitch throughout this game, really? What was the problem?
I think perhaps a little bit of imbalance in the team, some of which couldn't be helped because of injuries. I think certainly without Gwion Edwards, the lack of sort of dynamism and pace and direct running down the flanks was evident. I think with Sears and Judge out wide, they're both a bit one-paced. They're both sort of workman-like, both probably do their better work drifting inside rather than sort of taking on a man one-on-one. When either of them have got the ball at their feet, do you ever believe that they're going to produce a trick or a turn of acceleration and go past someone? I don't think so. And in these sort of games, when we're talking about finding a way to break down stubborn opposition, that's when you need a bit of X factor from those wide positions in a 4-3-3. And I don't think either of them produced that. Jackson, he's a willing runner. He can move people around up front, but by his own admission, a lone striker is not his best position. So there's another one there. So we've talked about Jackson's probably not a lone striker. Edwards and Judge and Sears aren't out-and-out wingers. Then Lancaster's played most of his football wide, certainly at a senior level. He's playing central midfield at the moment. Then you've got Chambers, as good as he's been this season, out of position at right back. And I just think when you start to go through multiple players not playing in their best position, that probably didn't help. But putting all that to one side, there was just too many players that were below par, just making unforced errors, just not at it. And when you have more than 2, 3, 4 players that are kind of dropping below a into four fives out of ten territory, then that's just not a good recipe, is it?
Yeah, for me, it was the lack of anybody really taking this game by the scruff of the neck and driving the team on and leading by example. That was the worry for me, and the worry for me in general is the wide areas, and we talked about Sears and Judge there as the two in this game. But in general, this system that they're playing to work, it needs that real threat from wide. Otherwise, if you don't have that, you're going to crowd the middle of the pitch as well, which means someone like Lancaster, who's playing as the number 10, is going to be crowded out, and Jackson too is going to be crowded out. So that's the worry from me.
I think on the wide issue. Sorry to jump in. I think that's fine with those sort of inverted wingers that are drifting inside. If you've got fullbacks bombing on the overlap, and Ward and Chambers were doing that towards the start of the season, but I thought both of them were a little bit safer, below par. They didn't have bad games, but they didn't stand out either, did they? They didn't really sort of add in an attacking sense as well. So I think when you combine the sort of the fullbacks not doing it as well as the wingers, that wasn't a good combo.
I think there was a lack of the defence didn't inspire me particularly at the weekend at all. I think the two centre halves had their struggles. Obviously, McGuinness gave away a penalty, and each of the two centre backs could have given away another, couldn't they, Ross?
Yeah, was that the first time they played together, Mark and Toto?
No, they played played at Sunderland. Okay. Together.
Yeah, I was in shock for the Toto one. What went out for a corner? I thought, how has that not been given? Like, we've been given, or opposite teams have been given softer penalties than that. And I was just thinking, wow, you know, this referee's got different minds to decide which penalty was penalty. I did actually see Mark McGuinness's penalty from first viewing, because I was in a different view. So I just sort of went, well, he's given it, so it must be a penalty. And then I watched it back and went, yeah, that is. But yeah, I felt a bit on edge with them too, really. Mark McGuinness is still young. I'm sure he will go on and have a good career. But maybe they didn't. Maybe together they're not so great. So, yeah.
I like Mark McGuinness. I think he's shown that he's got attributes to be a success in the game. But it comes back to the debate we had when he arrived, that he's a young player with raw edges. Why you're developing somebody else's player, and if he's not ready to make, if he's not going to be head and shoulders above what you've got, then why are you doing it? You know, they've got a young player in Corey and Darba that you could be allowing him to make those sort of mistakes and developing him at the moment. That would be the debate there. So Shrewsbury didn't offer a huge amount in terms of the way they played, but whenever they just dropped the ball in behind the back four of Ipswich, I thought they looked a bit edgy, a bit panicky. McGuinness gave, that was a stonewall penalty. I thought the second one from McGuinness not long afterwards could easily have been a penalty as well. Maybe gets away with it because Pugh's semi on his way down. I think if the referee doesn't give, if the first one doesn't happen, I think referees are always sort of mindful of giving two penalties, certainly to an away team within the opening, what would that have been, 15 minutes or so?
Something like that, yeah.
And then we discussed the Toto one sort of late on. Was that when Brett slipped, where a ball got sort of played behind him and the ball came into the box, and that was a sort of a desperate last-ditch lunge from Toto that he maybe gets away with as well. I think in fairness, we have to say that Ipswich probably could have had a penalty themselves when there was a two-handed push in Toto's back at a corner, but there can't be any complaints in terms of sort of refereeing luck going against them on this occasion, that's for sure.
No. One complaint where there would be some bad luck is the injury front. Going into this game, Mr. Lambert was talking about two injuries, mystery injuries that weren't going to be available. They turned out to be Gwion, Edwards, Ollie Hawkins, and also James Wilson, who's out for a couple of weeks as well. And then two more in the game, which leaves Stock incredibly low in a really, really big position of the field, doesn't it, guys?
Yeah, definitely. And, well, you know, like Teddy Bishop, he's had all of his injury problems, and when he went down, originally he went down, you know, and he didn't got back up and played for the rest of the game, or not rest of the game, rest of the first half, and then he must not felt good because he played on for the second half, didn't he? And he must have just felt it was still not good. But when you see players like him who've got injury problems, Teddy Bishop, Hughes, you just go, oh, you just feel on edge, like, oh, is this going to be a bad one? And, you know, we are just cursed with injuries. And, you know, was there any reason why there were mystery injuries? Lambert just didn't want to sort of...
Managers are always reluctant to show their hand to the opposition going into a game, which is understandable. But Teddy, I think hindsight's a wonderful thing. He should have been coming off at half time. I think it was clear that he was not moving particularly well. He kind of tried to twist his way out of danger in a deep position. He'd come in for some pretty rough attention from Shrewsbury. He's been targeted. They're not the first team to target him in as Ipswich's danger man, and I didn't think he got a huge amount of protection from the referee. But he's just twisted out of danger, and I think inadvertently the guy's trod on the back of his foot or his ankle. But he'd gone beyond that sort of 5 minute run it off period and still wasn't moving particularly well, and he's obviously said at half time, give me another 5 minutes, as all players do. Maybe that should have been taken out of his hands and taken off, because he came out at the start of the second half, and within seconds of the kickoff, we looked at him and he just was hobbling, couldn't move properly, and that robbed Ipswich of another window for a substitution, actually, because even though you can make five subs now, you can still only have three windows within the game to make them. Plus half time as well, so that did Ipswich out of a potential window for a substitution.
It's an ankle injury for him, which by the sounds of things is fairly serious. Was that the words used by Lambert? So I don't know what that says to me. Months rather than weeks.
Looks a bad one was the phrase that Paul Lambert used afterwards, who looked pretty downbeat talking about the injuries, as you can imagine. Gwion is a hamstring in training. Hamstrings normally depends whether it's a pull, a tear, what grade it is, but that I would imagine that's a couple of weeks normally for a hamstring at the best end of the scale. John Nolan's gone off with a groin problem. He seems to have had various muscle injuries on and off. I can think of calf seemed to plague him for quite some time as well. So we've gone from talking about central midfield being the most ridiculously overstocked position in the squad going down to bare bones. I mean, who would have thought that Ipswich would have been finishing a game with McGavin, Lancaster and Hughes as their central midfield three, not that long ago. It's crazy. So it's just as well they didn't let McGavin go out on loan before the window shut, because they'd be struggling now.
Certainly would be. We'll get maybe a few thoughts from the KOA army in a moment. But just before we wrap up this section and then move on to Lambert's comments after the game, do we need to make the argument here that actually winning this game is the sign of, and I don't say this with particularly much glee, of a good team? Does that can we make that argument here, just to round up this, or are the concerns that came out of it greater than the positive of the result? Or indeed, will we not know the answer to that question until this time next week?
Yeah, I think these next two games will answer that question better. But at the moment, the concerns from this game outweigh the result. Had it been, like you say, that AFC Wimbledon game where you're okay, you've gone behind, there's a bit of adversity, there's a team parking the bus, but you find a way, and there was pressure, and you pressure, and you finally found the breakthrough. It didn't feel like that. It just felt like a really poor performance, and it did feel like a result that papered over some cracks. And I think added to the fact that it wasn't just a one-off. I think you're now looking at the last eight games. There's been three wins in there from eight in all competitions, and those wins have been the 1-0 win against Crewe at home, where they massively rode their luck in that game for large periods. The Gillingham game, which I missed that one, but
You're testing me. This is where you begin to realise that these are blending into one, because I couldn't.
That was Teddy's last late goal, wasn't it? Teddy Bishop. So
yeah, which didn't feel like it was from memory. It didn't necessarily feel like it was going to come, but it was a really good goal when it did.
And then this one at the weekend. So you could say that there's been three wins from eight games, and all three of those victories you could probably label with the unconvincing tag. And I know, on the flip side, you could say that some of the games they didn't win, they perhaps deserved more from. But I wouldn't go too overboard on that. It's in context of what happened last season, isn't it? And I think Lambert, the players, everybody are probably looking at it going, we're third in the table. We've played six at home. We've won six at home. What more do you want from us? Maybe they are looking at the reaction to some of these games and scratching their heads, but surely they have to. Some of these players have been around a while. Surely they realise that the fan base, everybody needs a lot more convincing because of the collapse of last season, because it's set against the backdrop of the relegation before that, false dawns going, even, you know, a lot of this is deep, deep rooted, isn't it? With so many false dawns, so many disappointments, that I think there is a natural pessimism and cynicism built in amongst all of us at the moment. And it's hard to shake that off. And it's going to take a lot more than what we've seen so far to change people's minds, I think.
We'll move on to Lambert's thoughts in just a few seconds. But Stu, I believe you've got some thoughts of some listeners as well that are probably I'm gonna fill, well, because I can see you're looking for the screen where you get them from. I think they might echo a lot of what you've just said there.
Yeah, I'll take on the Mark Heath role, shall I, for today?
We're sharing it round, aren't we? We're filling the team. The team is stepping up to cover.
Glory Days artwork says, "I'm concerned about the mentality of the players." Stu mentioned after our equaliser that none of the ITFC players were G'ing their teammates on for a final push. I couldn't help but notice the constant fouls on Bishop, and again, not one ITFC player getting in the ref's ear. Basic stuff. Arthur Pickthorne, crying out for more pace and dynamism. We are too easy to play against at the moment. Norwood and Bennett should be starting to give opposition defence more to deal with. Plus, Norwood is a leader on the pitch. John Watson, we were so poor on Saturday, awful. The type of response on Tuesday is huge. The next two games are colossal. Importantly, what is Paul Lambert playing at with poor man management and weird comments? I'm losing belief and patience with nay normal Paul. We should and must be better, please. Few more comments along the lines of those, really. Paul Cook's name being mentioned a few times. I know there's always been a kind of questioning of Lambert bubbling under the surface, hasn't there, for some time. But this is kind of the first little junction where I've seen more people talking about that. Certainly now names of other candidates that might be available seem to be kind of being shared more. That says to me that we're getting into that kind of spell of the season where managers in general are coming under pressure, and I guess that's the case for Paul Lambert as well.
Well, it sure is. That's probably one for a bit further down the line in greater depth, maybe. But let's go to what John Watson was saying there about Lambert's comments, and this one was another. I think the expression you've used, Stu, is another questionable assessment of the game. But Ross, we'll go to you. What did you make of, firstly, Lambert's assessment of the game, and then we'll maybe move on to a chat about specific comments regarding Brett McGavin.
Oh, we've been here before, haven't we? Him saying, good performance, you know, we rode our luck at times, but we, you know, got the job done. Sometimes I think, is he watching a different game to us? I know he's got a different glasses on, he's the manager, so he has to, you know, be... He has to look at the game a bit differently to maybe me.
He certainly does.
Yeah. He's getting paid to, you know, manage this team, and, you know, yeah. But I don't know. He's no normal, is he? You know, I think he's just got to be. He's got to keep positive, and he can't. You know, he would never. I don't know if he's that sort of manager that he will. We'll go on to the Brett McGavin comments in a minute, but will he ever go out and say, "Yeah, we were not good today"? You know, we need to improvement. If not, yeah, I'm gone. I don't know.
There's a comment here, just going back to some of the comments, where this is from Sindre Eliasson, who says, "I'm curious to know what Paul Lambert says internally, if it reflects what he says in the media, or if it's completely different. I hope it's the latter." And there's a few comments along those lines, really. Harvey Davis, sick of listening to Lambert now. I've persevered but lost patience. Failing that, I'd have Nigel Adkins, Danny Cowley would see Adkins doing well. So there's a few along those themes. Paul Cook's name gets mentioned as well. But a lot of people just saying that the comments of Lambert is really sort of adding to their apathy, as well as the sort of the performances, really. So managers are always going to kind of speak differently publicly than they do internally. But I do think that this was always a debate around Mick McCarthy, that his words in the press got over picked through and over analysed, and, you know, media duties is just one part of their small part of their job and shouldn't be what they're judged and analysed on. It's what, you know, it's what they do with players. But I do think the way they deal with press conferences is a reasonable indication of, you know, if they're failing to inspire the wider public via their press conferences, then that surely is a reasonable indication of how inspiring they are behind the scenes with their players. And I don't know, this whole kind of we're playing incredible football, we're dominating games. I know there's no fans in the stadium, but you've still got 3,000 odd people watching via their laptops at home, and I think you can fall into a trap of treating people like idiots if you're not careful. They know we're not professional footballers, managers. We haven't been in the game, but I think we know what's good and what's not to a degree, and people are getting a little bit fed up of that now. And that was an easy one to deal with post-match on Saturday. We were nowhere near our best today. We know we've got to be better than that, but we found a way to win, and that's a sign of a good side, and put all the emphasis on those sort of things. But he just seemed to get embroiled in a bit of a strange tit-for-tat with Brenna Woolley from BBC Suffolk, which kind of started with, you know, wish you weren't so negative about the performance, and then turned into a few strange comments about Brett McGavin.
Yeah, let's move on to those. I'll just read out what Paul Lambert said about Brett McGavin for those that may not have seen. It was a pretty simple question, wasn't it? You must think that McGavin justified his selection in that position ahead of André Dessel. That was essentially the question. And Lambert replied, "He must be a favourite of yours," that's to Brenner, "because you wax lyrical about him all the time. My standard is maybe a little bit different from yours. There are some good things in there, and there are some things that he's got to get 100 times better with. The kid came in and done a good game. He's got big shoes to fill. He's got a really good range of passing, and I think he's better than what he showed today. But that's what we've got in that position at that moment behind Dessel."
The phrase that jumps off the page there is, "But that's what we've got." That would be the bit that would be the punch to the stomach to me if I was Brett McGavin. Let's not get it wrong. I don't think he was outstanding. I don't think he was anywhere near as good as he was against Portsmouth in the cup game, which was when we were waxing lyrical about him, because he was whipping in swinging corners underneath the goalkeeper, was a set piece threat. His range of passing was really good. He wasn't as good as that on Saturday, but he certainly wasn't the worst of a bad bunch. I thought first half he was one of their better players. He kept showing for the ball, showed a bravery in what is a really difficult position. Some things worked, some things didn't. But it's his second league appearance, senior league appearance. And he, you know, you have to have a little bit of grace there. And they need him again on Tuesday night, because Dessel's still suspended. The midfielders are down. That's just terrible man management to kind of talk about him publicly like that. If there's some issues with a young player, that things that you want to see him do better, talk about those privately, but big him up in public. That's an easy one. That was a free hit at giving a young player a little bit of a confidence boost in public. You don't have to go overboard with it, but just say some nice things. Certainly you don't need to go as negative as he did.
No, it's almost a case of it's not what you say, it's how you say it. Because the tone, I think, ignore the words, the tone of it was he's a good young player, but he's got a lot more to learn. Absolutely fine with that. But the way of saying it just wasn't great. Wasn't great at all. And like you say, he's going to be needed going forward. Let's draw a line under well, a shrewd...
My issue with it, sorry, just to add one more point, is that the senior players haven't... I can't remember the last time that Paul Lambert spoke about that way about some of his senior players. And the senior players are the ones that need to step up now. We mentioned Sears and Judge and others like that that are not hitting their own high standards at the moment. But Paul's been quite happy to talk about Luke Wolfenden during pre-season, who slightly strange that he's not in the team at the moment when he's a player under a long-term contract, a real asset, financial asset to the club. We had the whole issue with Dobra and El Mazzouni not earning the right to be in the squad photo during the season. It just feels like young players, to me, can be easy targets in these situations. That's how it feels to me. And I just don't think it's... If you look at modern man managers now, this whole kind of you've got to earn the right and you've got to... I know young players you've got to keep their feet grounded and stuff like that. But if you look at Klopp and Guardiola and people like that, they're modern day father figures that know how to push the buttons of young men these days and to get the best out of them and when to put an arm around and stuff. And I just don't feel like Lambert's doing that with the young players at the moment. And the young players, if Ipswich are going to get out of this cycle that they're in at the moment with the lack of funds and everything, then we know that the academy and producing from within is the only way they're going to do it. And right now, is Lambert going to be the one to get this crop of young players blossoming? And you'd have to question that at this moment in time.
I think that's a podcast in itself, isn't it? This whole topic. We should come back to that another day in a significant depth. But we'll draw a line under Shrewsbury at this point, and I'm going to hand the reins over to Mr. Ross, who is going to do something.
Yes, it's time for Mark's big question, but by yours truly, Ross Halls. So let's drop the jingle.
Mark's big question. Question, question, question.
All right, lads. I was saying someone called the police after the game because we robbed all 3 points, and that made me think about heist films. So the question is your favorite heist film or series, because there's that Money Heist on Netflix, which is pretty good, but it's dubbed. I don't like dubbed things, you know, where people, you know, just English, it's English voices, but it's actually a foreign TV show. But anyway, another story for another day. So yeah, heist films, are you a fan of them?
None of that foreign muck, please. English TV for me.
No, I don't mind foreign TV, but just don't dub it with English voices because it just looks stupid. But anyway, go.
I've not seen it. I can't comment. But my favourite heist film is Reservoir Dogs, which the heist, you don't really see it particularly, but it is there. And the whole thing is centred around a heist that goes wrong. And it's a film I've watched a lot. I think I had to analyse it in significant depth for an A-level and managed to come out the other side still really liking it. So I'll put that down as a success.
Cool. Have you got any to do?
Heist films. The Italian Job. Classic.
You're only supposed to blow the bloody doors off.
That's an uncanny Michael Caine.
No.
Ocean's 11 seems a bit obvious. Would you consider Drive a heist film?
I haven't seen Drive.
It's a good film.
Yeah. Is he a driver after a heist?
I can't. Yeah, I'll be honest. I've just Googled heist films while we're talking, and Driver's appeared on the list of posters. I know it's a film I like, but I'm now starting to question the storyline to it.
He's the heist like getaway driver.
He's the getaway driver, isn't he? Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah.
Okay.
Good
I'll
chat, fellas.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go, Ross. Bail me out here.
There's another film called Baby Driver, which is pretty good. It's got a good soundtrack, and Edgar Wright directs it, who's the man behind Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz. So, yeah, good film. Just don't mention Kevin Spacey because he features in it. But carry on, move on.
Not really allowed to talk about Kevin Spacey, are we?
No.
I am currently rewatching House of Cards, and I feel quite bad. I feel quite bad for doing it, but I won't lie. I still think it's really good. So I'm not. Yeah. I'm not gonna stop. Do you have anything else to add, Ross, to your segment before we move on to the Hull game?
I don't see us stealing all 3 points against Hull, so yeah, move on.
Perfect. The king of the segue has been crowned. Mark's been replaced. Hull, the leaders, come to Portman Road. Ipswich having seen off a team who were 22nd in League One. Now the leaders come, and these games against Hull and then Charlton will go some way to deciding which way the tide of opinion goes. Because I think, I know I certainly have been waiting for Paul Lambert and his team to answer questions. Can you right the wrongs of last season? And one of those major wrongs was not being able to beat promotion rivals. They couldn't do it, quite simply, last season.
I've got the stats here if you want them.
Hit me.
Of the 10 teams that finished above them, the record was 1-2, and they were quite early in the season. That was away at Fleetwood and away at Gillingham.
I'm struggling to count that Gillingham one as being... That seems even more fringy to me. But yeah, it's pretty damning, isn't it?
So of those two wins, they were both early. I think they were both August-September time, and one of them's Gillingham, and then it's drawn 8, lost 8 against the teams that finished above them. And that's kind of bled into this season a little bit so far. And they've lost at Lincoln, who are currently 6th, and they've lost at Sunderland, who are currently 8th. So whether you chuck the Portsmouth game in there as well, who they've obviously lost to in the Cup, I know that was a much-changed side, but... Yes, I think until they win one of these types of games, there's still going to be a lot of question marks hanging about.
What do we make of Hull? I'll be honest, I've seen a little bit of Hull, but a lot of it was in a 4-1 thumping that they had. I think it was 4-1 at Fleetwood. It proves they can be beaten. What do we make of Hull and also Ipswich's chances? You've kind of alluded to it a little bit already, Ross, that you're not feeling particularly confident about this one.
No, they beat MK Dons 3-1 on the weekend, which is a good result. You know, good old John Watson, who does the game day extra time. His dad is a season ticket holder at Hull, so he's watched all their games. And apparently, he said they're not actually that very good, but they're top of the league, so they must be somewhat doing okay. Of course, they've got Josh Emmanuel playing right back for them, so he'll be returning to town. They got a few good, you know, young players. They've still got a few of their players that they had last year. So, you know, they got what's his name? McGuinness up front.
Not big Northern Irish striker. Right, yeah.
So he'll probably, you know, test our defence out. They've also got another striker called Keane Lewis Potter. He's a person I signed on my Sligo Rovers career mode, if you wanted to know, back in FIFA 20.
I did want to know that, so yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah. They haven't got... Because last time we played Hull, of course, was in the Championship, and that Polish guy scored 2 goals against us, didn't he?
Grzycki.
Yeah, that's the one. But they haven't got him now, so, yeah, someone else is going to step up and probably score twice.
There's a fair few players have gone, haven't they? Like Jackson Irvine and players like that. But they've got some good players, sort of, good ball players in midfield in Honeyman and Richie Smallwood as well. Adelican is another one that we've seen before. Daniel Batty as well. Don't know if he's a relation of David's. I'm going to say no, disappointedly. But
no, I think I have looked that up before.
Can we just say yes?
Yeah.
David's boy, Daniel.
Yeah,
in midfield. Let's talk about these fullbacks. Two Ipswich Town cast-offs. Let's call them cast-offs. Josh Emmanuel, who at times he looks the embodiment of an athlete. He showed some really good signs very early in his Ipswich career, but spent a lot of time out on loan. Callum Elder at left back, a loanee that we didn't see an awful lot of in the end. But by all accounts, Stu, they are they're doing the business.
It's probably a sign of where Ipswich are at the moment, because they're both players that when they left, I don't think there was too much of an outcry. There was a sense that Josh Emmanuel probably hadn't kicked on as much as people had hoped. There was always a discussion that as good as an athlete as he was, and going forward he was strong and powerful, there was always a few question marks about his positional sense defensively at right back. Callum Elder, hard to judge him because he came in midway through that relegation season, but he made a few mistakes in there and probably hadn't done quite enough to kind of convince people that Ipswich should sort of go out and get him permanently. But here they are, two of very much the key players in the whole side that sits top of the League One table at the moment. And as well as Chambers and Ward have done at the start of this season, they're not the long-term solution at 35 years of age at both of them, are they? And Emmanuel and Elder of decent ages that could go on and get their careers very much well on track again. I think both of them got assists at the weekend, so it will be interesting to see what they're like back at Portman Road.
Beware the flying fullbacks. What about this Ipswich team? In many ways, it's going to pick itself, but also some decisions to make. I think it's probably worth discussing Luke Wolfenden at this point. If there's a route, if we think A, there should be, and B, if there is a route back into the starting 11, and then the makeup of the midfield and then the forward areas as well. I guess the midfield is kind of picks itself, would you say? Sadly.
Yeah, there's no other people really to put there, is there? Only if you want to put more players out of position, possibly. I know I've said this before, like, would Lambert change the system just for one game, just to play two up front? Because now we've got so many injuries in midfield, maybe you can't play as many midfielders. Why not play Norwood and Jackson together and see how that goes? And then Lancaster on the wing. And Judge, unfortunately, on the wing. Or no, Sears on left wing. And then midfield, Brett McGavin and Hughes. 4-4-2.
It would surprise me. Mm. It would really surprise me if he did. But I don't necessarily think it's the worst idea in the world. Yeah. Just the way that you hear Paul talking about this system. I asked him prior to the game at the weekend whether there was a way of getting two of his fit strikers into the starting 11. And he looked me kind of straight in the eye via a webcam and was like, no, not in this system. It feels like he's pretty wedded to it, do you think, Stu, or do you think we could see something different?
I think he's firmly, firmly wedded to this. I think he made his mind up in the summer that that's the way they're going to go. It sounds like even throughout all the age groups, the coaches have been told in no uncertain terms that you play 4-3-3 and you do not waver from that. So I'd be surprised, but I don't think it's... From what Ross has just said, I don't think it's the worst idea in the world. I think Jackson plays better with a strike partner. I'd be interested to see what Hawkins is like in a two. So, you know, someone that's, you've got the physical option and then a pace option alongside him. You're short of central midfielders at the moment. Sometimes it's needs must, isn't it? But I can't see it happening, to be honest.
So the Ipswich midfield, are we thinking McGavin, Hughes and Lancaster? Is that the three that we think? Or do you think Judge could move into the middle?
That's the only other option, isn't it? To move Judge inside, or Dobra comes from nowhere and plays as a 10, but I'm sure he'll come into the squad, but I can't see him going straight into the lineup. So probably will be the midfield that finished the game on Saturday, you would imagine.
Yeah, and then wide areas maybe maybe that's an area to look to change. We've seen Keenan Bennett's twice from the start in two cup competitions, and I'll be honest, he's looked a brighter spark from the bench than he has as a starter so far, but he's not had a chance of going for that in League One. Ross, would you consider some changes on the flanks? I guess we've talked about Bennett's and even Dobra coming in wide. Lancaster could move wide if Judge went in the middle. What would you do, assuming that we're sticking with this kind of 4-3-3?
Yeah, I'd like a natural winger. Keenan Bennett's is a natural winger. Judge is not a natural winger. Sears isn't a natural winger. You know, unfortunately, Sears was just chucked out on the left wing by Mick McCarthy, and you know, Paul Lambert's followed suit. So I think you really need at least one natural winger to play there. Once again, Jackson could go on the wing. We've spoken about that before. Maybe he could possibly go on the wing, and then Norwood up front, and then Bennett's on the left. I wouldn't mind seeing that, possibly.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see it though. No, I think we'd all like to have a little look at it, just to see. But it doesn't sound like that's going to be one they go for. I think I'd go with Norwood through the middle though, for this game.
Yeah, yeah, he's looked lively in the couple of times we've seen him sort of post comeback from these latest injury problems, hasn't he? And I think he adds a bit of aggression. A bit of leadership in terms of sort of leading by example. I hope the only positives that I'm keep kind of going to at the moment is that things could turn for Ipswich with a fully fit and firing Downs in midfield and Norwood up front. I think those two could make a huge difference. I know people will say, "What about Vincent Young?" I'm slowly coming at peace with the fact that the less we hear about Vincent Young's time frame isn't great for me. And I think, you know, it could be another month before he's back, another month before he's up to speed. The season, I think the narrative is written by then. But I think Downs and Norwood, hopefully, you know, Norwood is obviously sort of back on the fringes of it now. Downs hopefully can get back and going again, and those two could make a real difference to the balance of this side. And while we're talking about team selection, Andy, we were talking about the back makeup of the back four and Wolfenden coming in. You had a little theory as to what you might go with as a back four.
Let me try and remember. Yeah, I did. This was as we were walking round the back of the north stand in the pitch black, wasn't it, the other night? It's maybe a bit drastic, but dare I say it, I'd fancy a back four of Danasian, Chambers, Wolfenden, Ward. Oh. It's drastic. It's drastic. Maybe you even would call that rash to suddenly drop your two centre halves, but wouldn't devastate me if that was what they ultimately went with. But I would be surprised if Wolfenden doesn't come back into this side. Do you think, Ross?
Yeah.
I do feel sorry for Genoa sometimes. He doesn't even get into the 18, does he? He plays a full 90 against Portsmouth, does okay. He's not even in the 18. Kenlock gets chucked there and
still make him travel though. He's still sitting in all these away grounds with his hood up and not involved. No, I would. Look, I think he's fully aware of where he sits in the pecking order and the standing of things. I think he's quite a realist about that. But you know what? I wouldn't be against that back four that I just mentioned. Being a bit more sensible about it, I would probably go with Chambers at right back, and then maybe Wolfenden and Ciala. And Ward, that's probably what I would look at doing. But we shall see. Just to finish with, before we get to any kind of predictions, can either of you offer me any kind of positivity regarding this game against Hull City? Because I think we've probably painted a pretty negative picture over the last 50 minutes or so. But hit me with some positives about why and how Ipswich Town might be able to beat Hull tomorrow night, and then you can go to your prediction after that. Doesn't have to be a positive prediction. Anyone.
Hull have lost 4-1 at Fleetwood, as mentioned earlier, so they're not invincible. I don't think anyone, by all accounts. I was speaking to a few other reporters, League One reporters, over the weekend, and the picture I'm getting painted is very much what Mr. Jimmy Walker opined on Twitter recently, that this is a very average League One division this year. Even Peterborough, who are second, by all accounts, I mean, their results have tailed off, and it sounds like theirs was a tale of not playing as well as results suggested at the start of the season, and that they're probably missing even Tony more than that they expected. And you can go, I mean, we've seen Sunderland with our own eyes. I didn't think they were anything special at all. And you could probably go through a few of them like that. You know, Portsmouth put out their full strength side, and Ipswich's kind of weakened team gave them a decent game recently. So, yes, Hull are top, but that's not to say that we should be sort of in awe of Hull coming to Portman Road. Maybe they might look at Ipswich's performance at the weekend, and hopefully they'll be caught by surprise of a much improved performance, because surely Ipswich can't be as poor as they were. And I think it will be a completely different game as well. Hull will come here and try and play and not sort of put people behind the ball. And that could, and there's a lot of heavy lifting being done by the word could here, could play into Ipswich's hands a little bit more. But yeah, we'll see.
What's your prediction then? We always finish with these. It doesn't have to be in keeping with the positivity I've demanded from you. I want some realism.
I'll be honest. I don't know if I necessarily believed every word that just came out of my mouth just then. It's hard not to be pessimistic going into this, mainly because of the injuries as well. I think they'll lose 2-0.
Ross Halls.
Now, we've already beaten a relegated championship side this year against Wigan. I know they were in absolute mess, and Hull City are in a different scenario, but they did finish 24th in the championship like we did the year before. But yeah, I don't see us getting a win in this game. But I'm going to be positive. I'm going to go for a draw. I think we're going to keep our home form undefeated. I'm going to go for a Desmond. Why not? Goals, why not?
Desmond 2-2. I was also going to say a draw, but I think there's an element of forced positivity coming out of my mouth at the moment. But I think they can get a draw out of this, and I think it may end 1-1, which will again leave all of the questions largely unanswered, and we roll over to Saturday against Charlton. Right, I think that is enough, lads. Let's draw a line under this one. All that's left to say is thanks for listening. If you are listening but haven't subscribed, please do so on all your podcast providers. And I'm going to read all of them out. Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, Castbox, Deezer, iHeart, GeoSavin, Listen Notes, Player FM, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Stitcher, Buzzsprout, Radio Public. Shout out anyone listening on GeoSavin this week. So from me, Stuart, and Ross, we'll speak to you later in the week.
From true crime to football, Brexit to football. For more great podcasts from Archon, head to audioboom.com/channel/Archon. facebook.com/channel/pod.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.